Good morning and shalom aleichem. We have the privilege this Shabbos to read Parshas Va'era. Unbelievable. We're already up to, with Geula is already in the air. The Jewish people are languishing away in Mitzrayim, in Egypt. And we are beginning with the first seven of the Makos in this week's Parsha. Also, Chodesh Tov is Rosh Chodesh Shvat. This month should bring us much health and Hatzlacha, Bracha, and really a lot of simcha and joy into all of our lives. Let's begin with a lot of ideas this week. We'll be Rishonim heavy, and we'll begin a lot of ideas in the beginning of our Parsha. Vayikach Amram es Yocheved dodaso lo le'isha. The Torah in the very beginning takes a break from the dramatic story of Yetzias Mitzrayim and tells us about by the way, there's a genealogy of Reuben, Shimon, and then it goes to Levi. It stops with Levi, and it stops with the families of Moshe and Aaron. The Torah tells us very, very clearly that Amram, last week's parasha as opposed to that, Amram, the Torah never tells us who Moshe's parents are until this week. The Torah tells us that an Ish, mi bais Levi, married an Isha, mi bas Levi, a daughter of Levi, married a person, a grandson of Levi, but the Torah never tells us who those people are until this week. We learn that Amram married his aunt, Yocheved. They married each other. Why is that significant? Why is that significant? So the Chizkuni tells us in the future, Achar Matan Torah, this is going to be prohibited. It's going to be prohibited to enter a union of where an aunt marries a nephew. That is Usser. Ooh, Moshe Rabbeinu comes from a forbidden marriage, or what would be prohibited in the future? Wow, what does this teach us about Moshe Rabbeinu? I was teaching a group of my former students. The truth is, whenever you're a student, you're always a student. And I said to them, would you ever marry Moshe Rabbeinu? Would you consider dating Moshe Rabbeinu? Consider Moshe Rabbeinu's shidduch resume. He went to secular schools. He never went to any yeshiva, never had any formal yeshiva education. He ran away from his house. He grew up in the house of Paro, an evil emperor, evil king. And he, wasn't even a good speaker. He wasn't a great communicator with people. Would you date this guy? And not only that, the Torah tells us now, the Chizkuni reminds us that his parents were in an illicit relationship. Whoa. Right now, Achamat in Torah. So you have to think about that and what that means for Shidduch, and what does it tell us about ourselves? And what does that mean about giving somebody a second chance and that their past doesn't necessarily dictate who they're going to be in the future? The Chizkuni here tells us that this reminds us also about leadership. That leadership, nobody is perfect. Everybody makes mistakes. Everybody has something in their past that they are not proud of. That's not something that we necessarily flaunt, but it brings leadership to a sense of humility. And it reminds us that when we are picking and choosing our people, whether it comes to Shidduchim, comes to other areas, we should not be so picky. That's also true about ourselves. We don't want to pigeonhole ourselves into a certain category, a certain box. We're always looking to grow and become dynamic and grow as a result. So Vayikach Amram as Yocheved Dodaso, it's instructive, inspiring for us. Look where Moshe came from. Look where he is and where he could be. And he always has this reminder to remind him of his humble roots. That is the first idea in our Parsha, an amazing, amazing sharp Chizkuni. Moving on, the Torah tells us the Dalet Lashonah Shel Geula. One of the Lashonah, which is not the Dalet, it's really number five, is the Hevesi. The Hevesi, this is the representative of the Koshel Eliyahu at the Pesach Seder, the fifth cup that we do not yet drink, but Be'ezrat Hashem, we will one day. The Hevesi Eschem El Ha'aret Teshenasati Es Yadi, Echad Baruch Hu tells us and promises us that Hashem, we're going to go into Eretz Yisrael, Laseis Osa LaAvraham. This is the place that I promised Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov. V'nasati Osa Lachem, Morasha Ani Hashem. And I'm going to give you the land of Israel as a Morasha. Eretz Yisrael is called, considered a Morasha. Big shout out to Morasha, Kim Morasha, who was extremely influential in my development as a Ben Torah, my wife's, and my entire family. My mother-in-law was the head counselor of the camp as well. So Morasha, why is the Eretz Yisrael called a Morasha? And why is it not called a Yerusha? We have a Yerusha and a Morasha. When I write a will, that's called a Yerusha. What is the difference? We also know the Torah itself is called a Morasha. Torah Tziva Lanu, Morasha. Kihilas Yaakov. What's the difference? So says Rabbi Bachai, a very beautiful idea. He writes that when it comes to this, think about it. He's telling the Jewish people who are languishing away in Avdus, in slavery, in Mitzrayim, and telling them, you guys are going to get Eretz Yisrael as a Moresha. They, with a few exceptions, will never see Eretz Yisrael. They will never taste and touch the land of Eretz Yisrael, breathe in the air, the beauty and majesty of Eretz Yisrael. They won't see it. They will never ever see it or feel it or touch it. Yet it's a Morasha for them. Because he writes, a Morasha is not something that is physically given over, but it's something that is long lasting and will stay within the family forever. It's not physical, it's not tangible, but it's something that is going to stay forever. That's why Eretz Yisrael is something that is a Morasha. Torah is something that we never lose. It continues to influence us. We never lose our Torah. It's something that stays with us and is passed on to the, you know, future generations, our descendants. A few weeks ago, I wrote a letter, Parshas Vayechi, to remind everybody, not only is it very, very important, I hope that everybody here has a will, but it's also significant and important to write an ethical will. Describe the values that animate your life, the ethic, the moral, the challenges, you know, that and what dictated your life, what values did you live by, and what things you want to stress for the next generation. This is so, so important. And I would argue with you here is that on one hand, a Yerusha is that physical will, the dollars and cents, the physical things that are bequeathed from one generation to the next. The Morasha is the ethical will that passed down. And in some ways, this is more significant and more impactful on one's children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. And additionally, halachically, a Yerusha does not require a kinyan. Yerusha is automatic. Person passes away, it's like a direct deposit. It automatically goes to the person's bank account. As opposed to a Morasha, it's something that the next generation needs to work on to continue that in perpetuity and keep it. That is second idea. Morasha, Eretz Yisrael, Torah is a Morasha and not a Yerusha. Third idea comes from the Drasha Saran. The Drasha Saran writes, Moshe Rabbeinu tells the Kadosh Baruch Hu, it's ridiculous, it's not fair. They don't listen to me. Why don't they listen to me? Because I am an Arel Sfasayim. I have uncircumcised lips. Moshe was, not only was he extremely hesitant and reticent to become the leader of the Jewish people, he was a poor speaker. It's very unclear, what does that mean, he was a poor speaker? Some say he was actually just a bad speaker. Others say that he was he had a lisp and he couldn't speak well. And it wasn't just that he was uncharismatic, etc., and he wasn't dynamic, but he couldn't speak well. And the Ran asks, why would a Kadosh Baruch Hu, the Rabban Shel Yisrael, the teacher of the Jewish people, eventually he was going to teach Torah to Klal Yisrael, Moshe Rabbeinu, was one who was lacking in this area. You would think that if you were Moshe Rabbeinu would be the most eloquent and bright and brilliant speaker and so captivating and motivating in every which way. Why is it not like that? It's the Ran writes, to teach and to a very important point. Because you can argue that maybe the slaves in Egypt took hold and fell in love with Torah, not because of the Torah, but because they fell in love with a cultish or charismatic leader. And that's who they fell in love with. And they got stuck in this relationship because of this charismatic leader who had a lot of dynamism and was so eloquent and beautiful in the way that he spoke and the prose was amazing. So comes the Kadosh Baruch Hu and says, it's not about the medium. It's not about who's giving it over. It's about the message. Klal Yisrael didn't fall in love with Moshe Rabbeinu. They fell in love with the Torah. They connected deeply to a Torah lifestyle, to a Kadosh Baruch Hu himself. It was given through Moshe Rabbeinu. He was zocha to be that leader at that time and a shliach of Kadosh Baruch Hu. But it wasn't because of him. It wasn't the way that he spoke. It was the Torah itself, the content itself, which was so, so amazing and so, so inspiring within itself. It had value within itself, and it wasn't about the speaker. Third idea comes from the Rabak. Actually, let's go to a different idea first, and then we'll go back to the Rabak. At the end of the parasha, we have Makas Barad, which is Makkah number 7. And the Netziv makes a very fascinating point over here. The Torah says here, then Paro did not send out Bnei Yisrael. Velo shalach es Bnei Yisrael. He did not send out Bnei Yisrael. So says the Netziv over here, just a very brilliant point. And when you're learning the Makos every single year, you try to figure out, and you do this with the Pesach Seder, how is each Makkah unique? What's unique about each one of the Makos? What makes it different than the previous one? And here, the Netziv writes that this is the first time in this narrative of the Makos where the Jewish people are called Bnei Yisrael. Up until now, Paro and the Torah has been referring to the people as an Am, just a nation. Mikan ve'elach ksiv, Bnei Yisrael. He says from Makkah's Barad and on, they are called Bnei Yisrael. Why is that? What happened? What changed at this Makkah? So he suggests that it's Dafka at this Makkah where the Jewish people stopped being slaves. They stopped working on the pyramids. They stopped making bricks. They stopped all of that. V'kan niskayim ha'loshon sheni shel geula. The second loshon shel geula began now, which is v'hitzalti eschem me'avodasam. They stopped the servitude. Once they stopped the servitude, they were no longer just a random group of people that were, you know, grouped together and called a nation who happened to be together. But now they were considered and called Bnei Yisrael because what connected them and binded them was not their circumstance, but now was their mission. They were buying into the messages of Moshe Rabbeinu. They wanted to form together and to connect to the Ribono Shel Olam in a real way. Of course, they were still slaves because they were not, their passports were taken away from them. Their visas were taken away. They were not allowed to go anywhere. But this is when that it already began to change. The Geula was in the air. That is thought number 4. And we'll end with a very thought-provoking Ralbag. The Ralbag, one of the great Rishonim, writes that back to the beginning, Moshe says, they don't listen to me. Why? V'lo shamu el Moshe. The Jewish people won't listen to all of the amazing things that Moshe has to say about how he's going to take them out, lead them to Eretz Yisrael. Why not? Mikotzer ruach u'me'avodah kasha. Because of shortness of breath and backbreaking, very difficult labor. And the simple interpretation of this pasuk is that as amazing as the message that Moshe was sharing was, and the miracles that he performed on their behalf, and all the simanim and the pakod yifkod and everything that he told them was intellectually so stimulating and was something that they really wanted to get into, they just couldn't because they were just exhausted. They were just too busy. They were so done. They couldn't be inspired because they didn't have the capacity at this moment in their life to be inspired. There were too many things going on. They were too harried throughout life. That's Kotzer Ruach Avodah Kasha. But the Ralbag says something different. The Ralbag writes is that the Kotzer Ruach and Avodah Kasha wasn't on the Jewish people. It didn't reflect what they were feeling. It reflected Moshe as a leader. Moshe, the Jewish people didn't listen to Moshe. Why not? Moshe has shortness of breath and was working too hard. What does that mean? Moshe at this point, this is the second time he went to Bnei. He went to Paro again. Once they didn't listen, he added more work. Now it's the second time. Moshe became very impatient as a leader. Moshe himself was very overwhelmed as a manik of Klal Yisrael. And as a result, he couldn't give the message over properly. He was losing patience in this message itself. He was losing patience in his mission. And therefore, when he attempted to give it over to the Jewish people, it was missing. It was missing something. And therefore, they couldn't hear it because Moshe, at this moment, he wasn't into it either. He wasn't excited for it. Therefore, they couldn't be excited for it either. And you think about this on so many different levels. Many of us are teachers. Many of us are educators. Many of us are parents. Or in any which way, we try to motivate other people into getting into things. One of the hardest ways to motivate people into getting into things is when we are not into it ourselves. That is the most difficult part. And we have to be honest with ourselves. And sometimes from a, we can do it. When we do it from a sense of vulnerability, when we're open and honest, I'm really not into it, but let's do this together. Let's get into it together. It's exhausting. We're 10 months into a pandemic and we hope it's going to end soon, but I'm just done. I'm just done. And if we're done, what does it say about everybody else? But if we could be honest with that and say, let's do it together. Let's hold it. Let's do, don't touch, not literally hold hands, but let's do it together. That can be, lead us to the promised land. And Moshe really had to own that. The Rabbag says his personal kotzer ruach and his avoda kasha. Wish everybody a tremendous Shabbos, a good chodesh, and we should share many simchas together. Kol tov.